The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So, a very warm welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. And tonight, I'm really pleased to have Barry Johnson from Great Innate joining us. And it's all part of our theme of New Year, New Habits. And Barry is going to talk to us a little bit about why it's important to get fit and stay fit and why how we should approach it. Barry, thanks a million for joining us on The Parents Show.
That's sweet. Thanks for having me.
So for our listeners who don't know about Great Innate, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, it was Great Innate. It's the name of the fitness community we have. I started in the fitness industry myself back in 2008. You can also tell I'm not from St Albans, I am from Glasgow, but I moved down to St Albans back in 2000. And just a number of years down here led to me being very unhealthy and unfit myself. So I thought the way to fix that would be to become a personal trainer, because I figured they must have all the secrets. But, so I did that, but it turns out they don't have actually many secrets. It's just consistency, making good, healthy choices done over the long term. So with the Great Innate, I get a qualified 2008. I worked in the YMCA gym. I worked with some families, helping, like, coaching families to better health. I then started doing what back then was called St Albans Five Star Boot Camps. And over the years, it's changed, but we've been running the outdoor fitness community in Highfield Park now since 2011. And we changed the name Great Innate, A Gradual Better You, because we run like an 8-week wellbeing program alongside 8 weeks of exercise, which then sort of kickstart people and gives them an introduction to healthy habits and gives them the support of a group and obviously the coaching from myself.
All right. So you're absolutely brilliantly placed to kick us all into shape. So, you know, it's the new year. I don't know if people will be listening in January or listening back to a podcast, because I think it's always good to get new habits established. Will you tell us why it's important to establish good habits?
I think, again, what I've learned with myself is wherever we end up with the health and fitness is just a product of our habits. If they're like myself, and I've had, bad habits with regards to not exercising, eating too much, drinking too much, then you get overweight, you get unhealthy, and you get unfit. However, if you do start exercising regularly, you eat moderately and you get to bed at a decent time, you drink your water, you're healthy. So basically all our habits do is build the life that we experience with our fitness and our well-being.
So will you talk to us about how you establish good fitness habits, or good, it's kind of well-being too, isn't it? It's not just fitness, because they kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean, what I've discovered is pretty much everybody, you wouldn't need my qualifications or my experience to know that drinking more water is a good idea. Moving more is a good idea. Trying to get your bed air, less technology. So what I've found is it's usually people sort of know the things they should be doing. The challenge is just getting started. So I'd always suggest grab the low-hanging fruit, because first of all, what I've certainly done over the years is you try and stop all these unhealthy habits, at the end of the year, so you're fighting that. Then at the same time, you're trying to add on all these new habits that is exhausting, that your body's going, what the hell's going on, So to me, what I'm doing this month, it'd be in January, and with my members is, it's just everyone, they're cutting down on the alcohol, they're cutting down on the sugar, all the things we did in December to excess most people. And then it's like, getting up, drinking more water, just getting that glass of water first thing, moving more. A lot of the members will get back to the regular exercise. I think exercise is off putting to a lot of people. So when I say exercise, I think movement. So if you're doing nothing just now, going out for a walk for 10 minutes every day is a massive win, because then that becomes a long-term habit that gets you feeling better and stuff. Sorry, that's a very long-winded answer, isn't it? So first of all, I'd identify the habits that you want to stop, trying to moderate them or lessen them, but at the same time, grab hold of the low-hanging fruit, like get out for a walk, drinking more water, maybe switching the phone off a bit earlier, trying to get to your bed earlier. Sleep really is the foundation that all other pillars of health are built upon. For example, if you've got less sleep, you've got more carb cravings, less ability to moderate your or manage your emotions, less willpower and stuff. So if your listeners can do anything to improve their sleep, that's a big win. However, I do appreciate it's the parenting show, so you're at the mercy of your children with that one as well.
Absolutely. But what you say just makes so much sense, Barry. And I know everybody knows it, but we need to hear it. I certainly need to hear it as a parent, because sometimes the simplest things can be the hardest things to achieve. So knock out the bad habits, get some new habits, start somewhere. That's the thing you're saying. Get more than what you're doing.
Yeah, it's just momentum. That's the hardest thing. It's like, because I'm, you know, people ask me my opinion on diets, and I'm sort of diet agnostic, as in, you know, I don't believe there's one diet for everybody. So if somebody comes to me and say they're joining Slimmer World, they're joining Weight Watchers, or they're doing low carb, if they're excited and they're motivated, I'll be behind them, because it's just about getting that momentum going and, you know, doing what works, and it stops working, try something else.
Great. And how important, and this question is coming from me, because really, how important is it to stick to a solid routine? And is it possible to stick to a solid routine if you're not a very disciplined person?
Yeah, let me sort of unpack that a little bit there. So the stick to, were your words there, stick to a solid routine? Don't worry, that sort of intimidates me. So, the framing of it is the thing as well, because I think everyone thinks they have this, need somebody to wag a finger at them and say, don't do this, do that, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
The problem is like food plans, years ago, everyone would download and buy a food plan, which is great. They're good, you know, they'll have nutritious food, but the problem is, life doesn't go like steady all the time. You'll get a sick child, you'll get ill yourself, you'll get a family in emergency, your plans go out the window. So the goal is to have some sort of routine that by and large moves you towards your goals, you enjoy, and when life does hit you sideways, you can get back on track without it being a massive uphill struggle. And that's why just middle of the road, more water, trying to get to bed earlier, moving more than you have been. It's not masses of stuff. It's just about getting moving. And that's the problem why, you know, when people buy the 12-week plans and go, no, I used to promote stuff like that back in the day as well. But you realize, I'm 46, so all my members are like from mid-40s to like late 50s and stuff. So everyone's either relative young children or teenagers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You're at the mercy of what your family life is like. So that's why me giving you some sort of rigid diet or food plan and exercise plan isn't going to necessarily lead to success, and my job is to help you feel better and feel successful. So you've got to have a sort of a general plan that you can see and stick to that fits into your schedule but is a bit flexible, and when life does come along and knock you, you can get back to it, and you look forward to getting back to it because you feel good and you're looking forward to doing it.
That's so helpful. So the kind of rigidity that I was kind of suggesting isn't actually helpful. You've got to deal with the reality of your life, it sounds like.
I suppose it's like one of the things I use a lot with clients is one of my coaches said to me, and about exercise, he said the best form of exercise for you is the one you're not doing or avoiding. So things, if you're not doing exercise, do some exercise. But if you know, like, you don't really like doing like cardio stuff that gets your heart rate up and sweating, we all sort of need that, so you know you should be doing it. Especially if you're again my demographic clients, women. Well, everyone should do this, but especially women once they get into the perimenopause and menopause area, you really do, or feel like you do need to be doing some strength training. And all your listeners will probably know this. It's just about, so you know what you should be doing. If you're avoiding it, it's probably going to be good for you because it challenges you. And if it challenges you, it gets you fitter, it gets you stronger.
Brilliant. That's really, really helpful. And it's certainly the kind of light touch that you're bringing across helps people like me. I don't know how our listeners feel, just to kind of go, okay, you will get knocked off kilter, but just get yourself back as soon as you can, and, you know, as achievably as you can.
Yeah, and the thing that I just thought of that I discovered, because I've been doing the group exercise for like 11 years, as I said, and I'd love to claim that I've got some sort of magic ability of why the clients succeed. But what I've realized over time is actually the connection in the community. So if you can find some exercise but connect it with a friend or a group that you enjoy spending time with, that's what's going to make you want to go. Even on days you're tired, you may be a bit grumpy, you know, but you think, actually, I'm going to go because I'll feel better after this. And I see it all the time. That's from the friendships made, the camaraderie, the support of a group around you. People that share the same goals and aspirations as you, that will lead to success. And that's why there's so much free information on the internet, which can get bamboozling, but you usually find when you're struggling, it's not like what you need to know, it's like who you need in your life for a bit of support and encouragement, even if it's somebody at the exact same level as you. But being on that mission together and then asking somebody like me for some help or advice will just get you going in the direction you need to be going in.
That's brilliant advice as well. Thanks so much, Barry. So you touched on this a little bit about variety. So pick the things. Don't just go for the easiest thing. If there's something you're not doing, you probably should be doing it. And if you've got a tight schedule, how do you get that variety of activity in? And how much of a variety does it mean to be?
I think just moving is the first thing. Be aware that if, like, I'm quite fortunate in my job, because I'm always sort of moving around because of the nature of my work, whereas many people, a lot of your listeners, will be just sat down all day. So actually getting up and setting alarms, not thinking, just to get out, get some fresh air, even if it's for 5 or 10 minutes. So it's just about moving more, really. And if you can, definitely it's getting your heart rate up as much as you can, just a few times a week. Again, it's one of the things, is if it doesn't challenge you, it doesn't change you. And again, go back to your habits. We're a product of our habits. So, and unfortunately, our body is very good at adapting to bad habits just as well as good at adapting to good to healthy yeah. habits. So it would depend where somebody is. So if somebody's not doing anything, just get going. But if somebody's just like what you get a lot of people doing, well, I walk the dog a lot, which is brilliant. But I said, but walking the dog's not going to get your heart healthier, really. You know, getting out of breath, getting your heart rate up, will. Something to get you stronger. Walking's not going to get you stronger. Walking's great. And again, it depends on your time as well. So this is why it's quite hard. If you give me a one person or a group, yeah. a small group to look at and they tell me about their lives, I give you my yeah. best advice based on that. But it's more about, and I think overall as well, is just ask for some help, like with friends or you know, come to somebody like myself, and you think, because you'll always get people at me like talking for free anyway, because I like helping people feel good and stuff. But I think it's, don't set yourself up for failing by going to exercise every day for 30 minutes. If you can do 10 minutes each day, you're winning. But just trying to fit it in when you can. And that's why if it's like 10 minutes of yoga on YouTube, if it's like going out for a walk for 10 minutes, but it's just about getting started. It's consistency wins the day, really.
Absolutely. And you touched on it. You said the perimenopause and indeed the menopause and indeed straight after childbirth. These are all tricky times in, I'm focusing on mums now or women's lives. And they're probably the times when you're least inclined to move. But from what you're saying, probably should be actually when you move.
Yeah, it's difficult because, again, I wouldn't be, I should stress, I'm not qualified to diagnose or prescribe anything particularly related around that area. However, there's a Dr. Louise Newsome. There's a few, I don't know if you put show notes, there's a few definitely women should listen to podcast doctors that are specialists. But the problem with what I've seen in the fitness industry is it's sort of look backwards because as you go into the perimenopause and menopause, you know, it's like a deficiencies, your hormones drop and stuff like that. So sometimes that means you're going to have feelings of apathy, low energy, poor sleep. So then trying to tell somebody who's experiencing those conditions to try eat healthy, try exercising more, it's all backwards.
Yeah.
So the first port of call would be, you know, maybe going to see the doctor and looking at, again, asking is HRT the right thing for you? Lifestyle things certainly that help. But it's almost like when somebody's feeling really down, really struggling, just getting out of bed and getting showered and getting to work can be a win. You know, that's something to be aware of, is to be kind to yourself in that situation, realize what's actually realistic. But because I have large groups of women, so I'm quite lucky that way. You experience lots of like members talking to you, and it seems that each lady can have a unique experience of the perimenopause. Yeah. Menopause. The overarching thing is their body feeling like they're doing things it's not done before or doesn't feel like before. The lack of energy and apathy, just that feeling of just can't get going. And it's just when you recognise things like that, is to go and ask for some help from the doctor. But I think it's Dr. Louise Newsome's got a great questionnaire on her website, which you can tick them and answer them, and it gives you a rough idea of whereabouts you are, whether it could be perimenopause or actually the menopause.
Yeah, I mean, we've touched on it. You can't talk about parenting and not touch on the menopause of me, but it's Louise Newsome's great. I think she's got an app called Balance as well, which is super duper.
And so just to go back into what I do know about, is the one thing, but once you do feel like, and if you go through the menopause and you get to the point where you think, right, I feel good, or I feel best and I need to do some exercise, definitely prioritise strength training, obviously, because for the avoiding osteoporosis. And just the thing is, the stronger you are, the easier life is, you know, because life, you know, gravity doesn't go anywhere. And as we get older, we get weaker. So strong life's going to be good, but also keeps your muscles and your metabolism and your bones health in a really good place. So that's why we run a few strength sessions a week. So that's why I'm always saying to the ladies that joined, you know, prioritize those and then join in with the boxer size or the more cardio based stuff. But again, it's like it's the group environment that's what really helps, because it makes it a bit more fun. And even myself, and I've got a swim coach and other coaches, because you'll always work harder if somebody's, you know, coaching you.
It's totally.
And then yes, that's the, sorry, I know I'm going on a bit now, but the one thing I'd say, what I've experienced myself and with hundreds and hundreds of clients over the year, is very rare to be a self-motivator. So if you're struggling on your own to exercise, please don't beat yourself up, because that's the vast majority of the population are not self-motivators when it comes to exercise. It's usually you'll join a running group or maybe do the Couch to 5K with friends. Or there'll be a reason, a real strong emotional reason, like running the marathon, some for charity. But yeah, don't beat yourself up if you're struggling on your own, because that's why people come to me.
That's great. That's great advice to get out there and get somebody else to kind of help you and motivate you, because between you and the more people there are, one of you'll always be in the mood to exercise and make the rest of you come along, whether you like it or not. But I think a big part of the problem with parents in general, and actually people in general, is they find it hard to do something for themselves, that they're so focused on their kids and their work that it's hard for them to kind of pick out the time. Yeah. So what we often say in the parents show is that you're actually doing it for your kids, because if you're modeling health and fitness, you're actually doing a favor to your kids as well. What would you say about that, Barry?
Yeah, well, to say, you know, for a number of years I've went through different sort of coaching myself, and be that actually counselling, but also I was doing some of the life coaching years ago, and this lady said something that was really interesting called Claire. And she said, you know, as we grow up, you know, particularly women, your main role model is your mum. And what you see or what you experience is a mum always putting other people first. And then that's a trend that continues into our lives, again, more so for women than for men. But I mean, I was definitely that way inclined. I was much more closer to my mum. And you realise, and it's what Claire's point was, it's not like a positive thing. You know, we grow up thinking this is what a good mum does. You put everybody else first. And it just leads to, you know, some very unhealthy, very tired, overworked mums who are then beating themselves up because they're not exercising every day and eating broccoli with every meal and stuff, where it's not realistic. So I think that's it's spot on. And I think that's, you know, for me, I learned that as well. It's almost like a mum guilt, you know, I call it, is when they put themselves first or prioritise their own time. But I think, you know, what amazes me, or amazes a lot of people that join me, is like our early morning sessions are the most popular sessions. And that's just because that's that time of your day where you're more in control of it when everyone else is still asleep. So I think not necessarily exercise, but I'd say encourage anyone, if you can, if your sleep pattern allows, getting up and just having a little bit of time for yourself in the morning before the day kicks off. It usually really, really helps as well.
And I think a lot of people don't believe they're morning people. So, I mean, you have sessions at 6:15, 7:15, 9:30 in the morning. Yeah. But I think the 6:15 is one of the most popular, right?
Yeah, but Lydia, I thought I never used to be a morning person. I started this as a sort of business, and then I decided, oh, actually, this I kind of love this. You know, don't get me wrong, the winter presents the challenges. But yeah, I mean, as we come into spring, I mean, I love those mornings. I mean, I'm lucky because I'm out for sunrise every morning. But yeah, so yeah, I mean, easily half our membership would have sworn they weren't morning people and would have started at one of our later sessions. But as everyone's life gets busy, and again, not to repeat myself, but the time of your day that you've got most control over is first thing, because everything, your day will just fill up whether you like it or not. And that's why our evening sessions are always quieter. You lose motivation throughout the day. Kids, clubs, life, you know, this. Whereas like, if you can, and it takes a couple of weeks to get used to it, but to me, it's a game changer. And as you know, you speak to a lot of the members, that just their whole day runs better, more energy. They make better choices. They feel healthier, you know. So if you can, try and do it first thing, yeah.
Yeah, get it out of the way.
Exactly. And also, I love that quote somebody said to me years ago. It was like, exercise in the morning before your brain knows what you're up to. just wake up, think, right, this is what I do, get up, and then just turn up and you're winning, you know.
Brilliant.
Lastly, that's probably the one thing as well, like when you're people trying to motivate themselves, like, because what works for us is all you members, you turn up, you don't know what I'm going to get you to do. And sometimes that's the best way. You've just got to turn up and it'll work. Whereas if you're trying to do your own program, you know what's coming and it's easy to talk yourself out of it, you know. So ideally join a community of like-minded people, you know, that you can share the ups and downs and laughs with.
Absolutely. Oh, it's so many gems, Barry. So many lovely kind of motivational things that you've said in the course of our chat. I'm sure that will, I hope people are listening in February and March and April too, and they'll keep the momentum up and keep fit for themselves first and foremost. But also, it does set a good example for the kids, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
Brilliant. So if anybody wants to get in touch, Barry, how can they?
If you just go to the current website, it's just Great in 8, which is basically great, the word great in number 8.co.uk. or if you just Google outdoor exercise, St Albans will pop up as well. We're in Highfield Park, so we're just there. So yeah, just get in touch and anyone that's interested, I'm happy to have a chat with anyone, obviously for free. They come along and have a free week of coaching with us as well, and our timetable's on the website as well.
Fantastic. So nobody can use the excuse that they're not an early bird. Everybody can be an early bird.
Give it a go. You won't regret it.
That's it. You'll never regret exercise.
You never regret having a workout. You always think how you feel afterwards. That's the key.
Exactly. Exactly. Barry, great chatting to you. Thanks a million for joining us on The Parents Show.
Yes, thanks so much for having me, Lydia.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. So as part of our series of New Year, New You, we're really delighted to have Liz Alsop joining us from the St Albans Upholstery School. And Liz is going to talk to us about how upholstery could be your new hobby in 2023. Because, you know, it's really important for us as parents to work on ourselves and not just give every bit of attention to the kids. You know, put a bit of focus on what makes you happy, getting out of the house, doing stuff that interests you. So we thought we'd go hyper local and speak to Liz today about what she's up to in St Albans Upholstery School. So Liz, thanks a million for joining us on The Parents Show.
Oh, thank you, Lydia. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Lovely to have you on. So tell us about you and upholstery. How did you make friends, when, and how did it get you to where you are today?
Oh, well, my goodness, that's going back a few years now, Lydia. So I got into upholstery when I was just a teenager, and I inherited some chairs from my grandmother. And they were just beautiful, but I didn't have the money to have them done up myself. So I embarked on an evening class, and it just became something that snowballed, and I got more and more into it. And then I was really lucky, after I had my family, I had the opportunity to make it my profession. So I've been working as an upholsterer and teaching upholstery for the last 15 years now. And it's just the best thing. It's the best thing. And it's so nice to be able to talk to you today about upholstery, because it's enriched my life. And it's lovely seeing all the students come in with their furniture and just get such a kick out of doing it up and taking home something that they've created but is useful. You know, it's actually something they use every day.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to say, it's one of those things that I'm always thinking, would I be any good? I'm useless at sewing. I mean, I couldn't knit for toffee. Do I have it in me? What kind of people do you get coming through your doors? Are they people who are very arts and crafty anyway?
We get all sorts. We get people who come with a sibling or a parent because they want to spend some quality time together and actually develop a hobby together. We get parents who want to escape, you know, have a bit of time for themselves, and they always mean to take up a hobby, but unless they get out of the house and actually sign up for a course, they never find the time. And we get a lot of pensioners who suddenly they retire and they think, right, I'm going to take up something new. We get people who maybe their main job isn't something that they find particularly rewarding creatively. So they come to an evening class and that gives them an outlet. So we get all sorts of people. And one of the nice things is the community that an evening class creates. So everyone's so different, but they have a shared endeavor, you know, and so they work alongside and they chat about what they're doing, but they chat about their lives and they get really involved in everything to do with each other. They become really good friends. I've got people who've been coming for 15 years to the same leisure class, and they're like family. Those classes, they support each other so much.
That is amazing. Imagine doing it for 15 years. That's just, it's so lovely. Well, it's clearly quite addictive then, by the sounds of things.
Oh my God, it really, really is. And some of the people who've been coming for a long time, I see furniture that they did years ago coming back to be redone. And it's funny. It's like seeing an old friend come back. Oh, this again. I remember this when you first did it. You know, the cat's been at it, or the dog's been at it, needs a new lease of life.
That's awesome. That's so funny. And so tell us, so how much of a commitment is, what kind of courses are going on at St Albans Upholstery School? And maybe first tell us a bit about the school. I mean, I wonder if our listeners know about it.
Well, it's quite a niche thing, I suppose. And generally speaking, when I'm talking to people, they don't know about it unless they've gone specially looking for it. We are based in a converted barn out at Courses Farm. So Courses Farm is in Coney Heath, which is just outside St Albans. We've been there for 15 years, And we're open 5 days a week. And we run evening classes and daytime leisure classes. And we also train people for the trade. You know, people who want to take it more seriously and they want a diploma that's recognized by the professional body for upholsterers, which is the Association of Master Upholsterers and Soft Furnishers. So they're taking it more seriously and they come and train with us for 3 years. But we also run weekend courses, and the weekend courses are more specialist. So we do chair caning and repair for leather and wood finishing. We do passementerie, which is all the tassels and the trimmings. What else do we do? Soft furnishings, so Roman blinds and curtains. There are so many different courses. You just find something that suits you. And if you've never made a cushion before, you'll be guided through every step. And by the time you leave, you'll be able to make them. And then, you know, Christmas comes and everyone gets a cushion.
You can't go wrong. Everybody needs an extra cushion. That's amazing. I have to say, I'd no idea that of the variety of courses and activities that are at St. Albans Upholstery School. And is there a bunch of you there? How many teachers? How big is it?
Well, it is quite big, actually, Lydia. So there are 5 teachers now. And between us, we cover, I couldn't tell you how many classes, but I've counted up the number of regular students. So in a week, we see 70 students.
Wow. That's, you know,
that's quite a lot of people through the door. We're ever so well equipped. So we have a class size maximum of 10. So 10 workbenches, and we've got the pneumatic air lines for the staple guns. We've got all the equipment for traditional upholstery, because of course that's dying craft. And that's one of the principal reasons why we set up, was to keep a dying craft going. And we've got all the materials, we've got all the fabric books. It's a one-stop shop for everything you need. You come in with no skills. You just come in with a desire to learn and a piece of furniture. That always helps. And then we just get it sorted for you.
And, you know, I bet everybody listening in, everybody has a piece of furniture in the house that they've inherited or bought secondhand or has just been worn down that they swear they're going to get done. They're going to get it upholstered one of these days. But this is a great opportunity to actually make a lovely project out of it, isn't it? So you could take a chair or an armchair and maybe do an evening class, or is that the case, Liz?
Yeah, that's totally right. And what's really nice about upholstery is it's where art and engineering meet. So it's creative, and you bring everything that you want to kind of express in a piece of furniture that at the end of the day, you have some use for it. There are 7 million bums in the world and they all need something to sit on, you know? And so you take away something that you're going to use every day. And when you go into a room and you see a piece of furniture that you've made, your heart lifts. And so many people are based at their homes now. They don't go into work so much as they used to, and they want their environments to be lovely. And it's just one way of making an environment yours is to bespoke the furniture.
Yeah, and to be able to put the time and effort and energy, it must be so rewarding.
Well, I definitely find it so. And there's no shortage of students who've, they watch the repair show on television, or they watch Interior Design Masters or Money for Nothing or Escape to the Chateau, and they think, okay, I could do this. You know, people are really in love with the idea, the possibilities of transformation. And it's not just one of these kind of, you know, dreams. Oh, maybe I could do that. Oh, but I couldn't really. You know, everyone can. It's really doable. It's really doable.
That's awesome. I mean, I think a lot of people have decided new year, it's time, and it's time to pick up a new hobby, to get something new. So how long are the evening classes? This is totally manageable.
Well, in actual fact, it is, yes. So the evening classes are 2 hours, and we run them Monday to Thursday, 7:15 to 9:15. The daytime classes, we run them in the mornings. And then the weekend classes, they're standalones. So you don't commit to a course. You just sign up for a single weekend. But in fact, it's a really good time to be speaking to you, because our year divides into two. And so the second half of the year starts at the beginning of February. So we're just working out all the registers, finalizing all the classes. So there are one or two spaces still left in an evening class. I think all the daytime leisure classes might be full, but it is really worth people looking on our website, seeing what's available and seeing if they'd like to come along and give it a go. They won't look back.
Oh yeah, no, I totally believe you. I'm sure everybody's feeling like me, like, oh, I can do this, I can do this. But so you've got to tell us the website, please.
Yeah,
so
so it's www.stalbansupholsteryschool.co.uk.
Nice and easy, all same case, everything. Yeah. And I have to say, I'm a big fan of your Instagram pages.
Well, so thank you very much.
There's Sitting Pretty. Is it Sitting Pretty St. Albans or just...
So my own personal business where I take on commissions for people is called Sitting Pretty. But then the upholstery school is how people would contact us if they wanted to learn. And then separate from that, we also have next door a commercial studio where there's a collective of qualified upholsterers who take on commercial work. And that's the St. Albans Upholstery Studio. So it's a similar name, but that's the commercial side of things.
That's brilliant. So, I mean, I'd really urge all our listeners, please, if you're on Instagram, hop over, just have a look at the quality of the renovations. And I mean, I just think they're so, so beautiful. Like the materials that are being picked, I have to say, I always get a little bit of chair envy when I'm looking at your Instagram pages.
Oh, that's so sweet of you. Thank you. Well, there are many, many beautiful fabrics out there. And I always get a kick out of seeing what the students do because I can only manage a few pieces of furniture a year. You know, maybe I'll do 15 pieces, 15 chairs, armchairs, whatever, chaise longue, whatever comes my way. But then if you've got 70 students and they're all doing different pieces and different fabrics, you really get a fix. You really enjoy seeing everyone try different things out. It never gets dull.
Brilliant, brilliant. So the website is how you can sign up for courses if you want to try and get the couple of few places that are left.
Exactly. So that tells you everything that's going on, and then give us a ring. We don't actually have an automatic sign up on the website, but all the details are there. And then just give us a ring and you'll speak to either me or my wonderful business partner, Sari Margosian, who's always on the end of the phone. And then we'll get you sorted with exactly the right course for you.
And Liz, so because this section of the show about new year, new you is really for parents, because we know we do a great job in getting our kids' activities up and running, but quite often we're not putting our money where our mouth is. You know, we're getting them set up with hobbies. Mm. And in the meantime, we've none. So I think this is a great opportunity to model great behavior for our kids. We're putting something into something that we find personally rewarding. Mm. Do you find parents come to you like that? Do you find moms or even dads come to get a hobby, to get out of the house, to kind of develop their own interests?
Absolutely, absolutely. People need time for themselves. And the people who seem to really get the most out of it are the people who are drained, you know, by either their jobs or their families. And they just really need someone to put a little bit back. And they come along and they spend time being taught and being given information and being given skills. But as well as that, they're able to talk over things that are going on with their lives with the other people there. And, you know, parents, whatever group they're in, parents will always find common ground. And they might be upholstering an armchair, but they're talking about their sleep, you know, the sleep patterns of their children. And it's just one of those wonderful community spirit places to be. It's got good air. When people come, they don't want to leave. And you know, the class runs till 9:15, but you find people hanging around and having a coffee till the late hours, you know, and we often meet for lunch. And it's a bit of a hub. And people who come, they stay, even if they only do one course with us, they stay in touch and drop in and, you know, pick up fabrics and materials. And they never really want to leave.
That's so gorgeous. Really, really lovely. But and it's brilliant. I hope our listeners will take inspiration from you. And I think the thing that'll appeal to people is the kind of the physicality of it, that that's you're right. Taking something, you're using your hands. You know, it's not computer based, it's not computer generated. You know, you use your hands in a good old fashioned way to repair and restore something back to its former beauty.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, that's, I think, the most appealing thing about it is everyone works at their own speed, at their own level. There's no pressure and they're just able to use their hands. They don't have to worry about broadband working. All they need to do is come along with a little bit of focus and a desire to create something beautiful, and they'll be able to do that without a shadow of a doubt.
Brilliant. Liz, thanks so much for joining us on the Parents Show, and best of luck with the new year in St. Albans Upholstery School.
Oh, real pleasure. Thank you so much, Lydia.
Hello and welcome to the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia Elcoury.
I'm Neil Roger.
So we've got a fantastic show lined up for you. I mean, you'll have heard in the news that a no-fault divorce has come in the UK. So As soon as we heard that, we thought we've got to get Raiden Solicitors on the show to talk to us about it. And I'm really pleased to be joined by Jessica Smith, who's a family lawyer at Raiden Solicitors. And Jessica is going to talk to us a little bit about that topic. So Jessica, thanks a million for joining us on the Parents Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit about your role at Raiden's, Jessica.
Okay, so I am a solicitor in the St Albans team at Raiden Solicitors. So my role is very much all family sort of law related aspects, and that deals with anything to do with a relationship breakdown. So I'll deal with the divorce itself, the finances related to that, and any arrangements for children. We also deal with things that happen before you even get married, so we can deal with prenuptial agreements. We deal with surrogacy, basically any aspect of family law that someone requires assistance with, we will help with. That's my role.
Great, thank you. And so Jessica, obviously divorce is something we've dealt with a few times on a parent show because it has very serious and far-reaching consequences for families and parents and children. Can you try and explain to us a bit about the latest developments of the law relating to divorce, please, and how that might affect people listening, thinking about this kind of area?
Yeah, of course I can. So for anyone who doesn't know, the law changed on the 6th of April this year, that's 2022. So the law now says that there still is one ground for a divorce, and that is the irretrievable breakdown of the marriage. Previously, that was supported by one of five reasons. So any couples divorcing had to give a reason for their divorce, and they had to provide that to the court when they were making their application. Two of those reasons required one party to be blamed for the marriage breakdown. The other three required a period of delay, which would have been a minimum of 2 years. So people were basically left in a situation where they either had to blame each other if they wanted to progress with a divorce quickly, or they had to wait for a period of 2 years in limbo, essentially, before they could do anything about their separation formally. So since the 6th of April, parties can now apply for a divorce without having to give any reason at all. So they just confirm to the court that their marriage has broken down and they don't have to give any reasons for that. One of the other big changes is that there used to be an applicant and a respondent. So one party would make the application and the other party would respond to it. Now couples can decide if it's a mutual decision to separate, or if they decide actually one person says, I want to end this marriage, and the other one says, fine, I agree to that. They can apply jointly to the court for a divorce. They don't have to do it on their own. And that makes parties, I think, feel like neither is, again, at blame, and that actually they're both moving forward with the process together rather than one of them doing it and then the other one having to respond to that application. So that's one of the big changes. And I think the overall aim of all of that is just to reduce the animosity and the conflict between couples who are divorcing, and to sort of facilitate their future relationship, especially where there's children involved and they're going to have to co-parent. But that's one of the big reasons. It's also the other aim is to try to reduce the cost of a divorce and to make it easier for the parties to obtain one. So that's the biggest change, is that now you don't have to blame anybody for the divorce. You can just agree to get one and just say to the court, please, can we have a divorce? And you'll be granted one without having to give reasons for that.
That's it. Really good news, it sounds like, Jess. It sounds like an improvement in the system. So have I got it right? It's cheaper, it's less acrimonious by the sounds of things. Is it also faster?
No.
Okay.
So the time process is generally the same. So you make the one party, or jointly you would make an application. So even though if it's a joint application, one person has to go ahead on online onto the court system and actually physically make that application. The other person has to respond or say they agree to that application being made. And then there's this mandatory period of 20 weeks where nothing can happen in the divorce process. And the court has included that period of 20 weeks as a period of reflection. So people can take stock, think about whether this is what they actually want. But also it's an opportunity to deal with any other matters associated with the relationship breakdown, such as the arrangements for children and financial matters. So after that 20-week period, you can apply for the next stage of the divorce, which is the interim order. And then 6 weeks later, you can apply for the final divorce order. So overall, you're talking about 6 months from application until the final order in just the divorce process. So actually, that's not that different from what the timeline was before.
And does it differ in any other way from the original, the pre-April divorce application?
Not really. The only thing that has changed is the names of the orders. So the terminology has been updated. Before, the interim order that was made in the divorce process, which is the first order made, was called the Decree Nisi. That's now called a conditional order. And then the final order used to be called Decree Absolute, and that's when you are formally divorced. It's now called the final order. And I think the main aim of changing that terminology was to make it easier for litigants in person, that's people without legal representation, to understand the terms and what they meant, just to update it. But essentially, the process is the same. You make the application, you get the interim order, and then you get the final order at the end.
Hey, Jessica, look, I've got a possibly quite a thick question here, but that's why I've been brought in to ask exactly those questions, right? So a no-fault divorce, which sounds almost like the most pleasant way you can ask for a divorce, right? Can one of you try and get a no-fault divorce? Or is that, or do you basically, you both have to agree it together?
No, so this is the beauty of the no-fault divorce. You don't have to agree. So if one person wants to end the marriage, they can make the application and the other person cannot refuse that application. They can't say, I don't want to get divorced, or I don't think it's no-fault. There is only one way you can get divorced now, and that is using the no-fault system. So previously, where reasons had to be provided, that's where there were sort of disputes about what the reason was, and that's sort of what increased costs and all the tensions. Now, if one person wants a divorce, the other person cannot prevent that from happening. The only way that they can defend an application is on very limited grounds, which are in practice going to be rarely used. It's things like the English court doesn't have the jurisdiction to deal with a divorce, or actually legally they were never married in the first place. They can't just say, I don't want a divorce because I want to remain married to this person, or I don't think that the marriage has broken down. That's not an option anymore. So if one person wants a divorce and the other doesn't, the divorce will happen and it will go ahead and it will be always on a no-fault basis. Now you can't use the old system at all anymore.
That was my next question. So literally there is no other type of divorce you can apply for now. There is only no-fault divorce going forward. Is that what you mean?
In England and Wales, that's your only option going forward. You can't use the old system. You can't use any fault system. It's literally just one straightforward no-fault divorce system now.
But it kind of makes sense. I mean, what I was going to ask you is, why would anybody do anything other than a no-fault divorce if it decreases the kind of the tension and it's less costly? It just seems to make more sense overall.
I agree. I think it's just difficult in situations where one person does feel that there is a reason why the marriage broke down and they want to blame the other person. And historically, I've seen that. So now, I get asked the question a lot, well, my husband did this or my wife did that. Is that going to make a difference because their behaviour was bad? And they are almost quite shocked when I say, actually, no, the reason for the divorce doesn't really matter. If one person wants to end a marriage, it doesn't really matter why they want to end it. It is a no-fault divorce system now. So there's nowhere that you can sort of say, this is no fault, but I want to blame this person because of X, Y, Z. That's not how it works anymore. We just have to go through a very basic administrative process, which is, I want to apply for divorce. And then you get to the end of that process and the court won't even be aware of the reason why that marriage broke down.
Jess, I've got possibly quite a nosy question, but I think people will be quite interested in this. So yeah. Have you seen an increase in people coming to you to talk about divorces since everyone was locked down together during the pandemic?
It's a very interesting question. And it's one that I think as a family, a divorce lawyer, we get asked a lot. I would say in my experience, there was probably a bit of a spike at the beginning of lockdown where parties were sort of kept together at home. But overall, I don't think the numbers of divorces have increased any more than they have any other year following lockdowns, COVID. I think it's sort of leveled out now. And I wouldn't say actually there's any big spike as a result, which probably is surprising, but that's my experience.
And more broadly, how about since the no-fault divorce came in? I mean, it sounds like a much simpler, less complicated system to use. Has that caused a spike in divorces?
Again, I think it's similar. So at the beginning, I think there was a spike, but I think that's probably because if you were thinking about a divorce in, say, January time, we would be saying to people who came to see us in January, just so you're aware, in April, there is the introduction of no-fault divorce. Do you want to wait? And a lot of people would say, actually, yes, I'm not bothered about getting it started now. So let's wait 3 months. So I think probably after the 6th of April, the court saw a big spike in applications just because people had waited for a few months to do it. But after that, I don't think it's increased the number of divorces overall just because it's no fault. I think obviously it makes things easier, but I don't think it probably is the difference between a couple saying they want to have a divorce or they don't, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So, Jess, I just on that point, I mean, in your professional opinion, are you pleased this new law has come in? How do you feel about it? How do your colleagues feel about it? Does it make sense?
100%. So family lawyers have been saying for years and years and years that the law needs to be reformed. The legislation, which was put in place to deal with the divorce, the last time it was amended in relation to divorce was in 1973. So it's very outdated. We've been calling for years and years and years, lobbying government for years and years to try to get this change to happen. And finally, it's in force now. But it's taken a long time to get to this point. And I don't think you'd ever meet a family or divorce lawyer that would say otherwise. I think we're all very happy that it's finally here. And it takes away so much of the initial stress and conflict that actually, I think overall, for us, it just started everything off in a negative way, where you're trying to apportion blame to somebody when actually overall the reason for the divorce isn't going to affect anything in the long term. It's not going to affect your financial arrangements. It's not going to affect arrangements for the children. So actually there was no real point in there being a blame. So yeah, I think overall we're all very happy with this change in the law.
So, right, in practical terms then, Jess, so once, you know, people have had, I'd imagine, quite sad conversations and people have decided that divorce is the way they want to go, or that one party, as you mentioned earlier, has decided that. What's the main bit of advice you'd give someone in that situation?
Yeah, so I think that's going to depend on the circumstances and the separation and how well people are able to communicate. I mean, obviously, the best option for most families is that people can communicate and agree things between themselves. And the divorce process itself is very straightforward now. People can go online and do it themselves. So you don't necessarily need a solicitor to do that. But one thing I would say is if people are struggling with communication, which often is the case once their relationships break down, or there's things that they just can't agree, there's sticking points, or I experience this a lot, people go online and they put into Google, how does the law work? What do we do? And there's lots of information flying around, probably most of it inaccurate. Then I think most law firms will offer an initial meeting at a fixed cost. And you can literally go to that meeting, ask all the questions that you want, get that initial advice about the divorce process itself, the financial arrangements that you need to agree, and any arrangements for children. And you can just get that initial legal advice so you understand at least your position. And then there's no obligation to continue with that solicitor or legal advice. At least then I think it sort of empowers people and it makes them think, at least I know the position from a solicitor rather than from looking at the internet or from hearing from friends and family about a bad experience or however. So that's something that I would always recommend to people. But yeah, generally just trying to have conversations and just trying to work through things however best that it works for each couple.
That's really, really sound advice, Jess. And I think it's brilliant to hear your suggestion that obviously not everybody will have the means to go and seek out a lawyer, but at least book an hour, come with all your questions, be armed with facts instead of surfing the internet and kind of trying to figure out what's true and what's not true. Because I'd say there's an awful lot of Chinese whispers and false information out there.
Exactly that. And that's what a lot of people who will come for a meeting with us will say, I've heard this, is this true? And often we're saying, that's not the position at all. And I'm not saying that necessarily the advice is always going to be the advice that you want to hear, but it's the law and you'll be more equipped to deal with how things are going to work going forward if you understand, like you said, facts rather than just myths or Chinese whispers, I think.
Brilliant. So can I just ask you about the financial settlement and custody of children and stuff like that? They're two of the biggest issues. I mean, I think custody of children is the main issue and they are the sticking points. Does no-fault divorce help with either of those issues? Does it change how you approach those issues? Or does it just get the tone right at the beginning so that there's less acrimony in and around those two issues?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think it's all about setting the tone and trying to make things as acrimonious as possible, just so that people can have those conversations and not automatically shut down and be annoyed with each other from the outset because of reasons they're having to rely on for their divorce. So I think the main thing is it keeps channels of communication open to an extent, and it means people can talk about those things more easily. That's what I would say. But in terms of the law in relation to the finances and arrangements for children, the no-fault divorce doesn't have any impact on those. They're completely separate areas of law that haven't gone under any reforms at the same time.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. It's been brilliant to talk to you, Jess, and to get your advice. And, you know, divorce is such, it is very complex. It happens to a lot of families. And the more people are equipped with the right information and there is less tension as possible, I think, the better for all our communities.
I completely agree.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jess. That was really, really interesting. Thank you.
You're welcome. Very welcome.